Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is July 8th. I'm Jordan Pangelinan, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, CAL FIRE gives update to the Bridge Fire, Marble Complex Fire update, and an update to the Butler Fire. Stay tuned, news on those stories and more coming right up. A joint message from the North Coast Unified Air Quality Management District and partners. The Butler Fire, about 8 miles east of Orleans in Siskiyou County, and the Summit Fire Marble Complex in the Marble Mountain Wilderness in Siskiyou County, are active and continue to generate moderate smoke impacts for some northern Humboldt County areas. The Red Fire in Del Norte County, east of Klamath, in the Six Rivers National Forest in the Siskiyou Wilderness area, is still fairly small, but has the potential to generate smoke impacts going forward. The Bridge Fire near Alder Point in southern Humboldt County has been active yesterday, with smoke impacts affecting immediate and surrounding areas of Alder Point, although smoke production has diminished today. Air quality monitors and the current air quality index for communities should be viewed at the EPA's Air Now Fire and Smoke Map at https://fire.airnow.gov. U.S. Forest Service Air Resource Advisors may have deployed on a fire and may issue smoke outlooks, which can be found at http://outlooks.wildlandfiresmoke.net/outlook. CAL FIRE Humboldt Unit's Fire Captain Specialist Jordan Kilberry gave KMUD News an update to the Bridge Fire located in Alder Point.
So the bridge incident is a total of 403 acres in the brush and timber. It's 30% contained. There is a continued threat to structures while they're still trying to reach that 100% containment. Evacuation warnings are still in place. It's in difficult terrain, so that's why it's taken some time to get to that 100% containment. There's multiple resources at scene, continuing to improve and strengthen the control lines that we have in place and mop up fire.
As we are in fire season and feeling the warmer temperatures, Kilberry gives this message to the community.
Just to know that we're in fire season right now, and obviously, especially in southern Humboldt right now, we have, warmer, hotter, drier conditions than we do in other parts of the county, windy conditions at times, which those three things together, hot, dry, and windy, are the perfect conditions for a fire to start. So just to advise the public to be mindful about the continued fire danger and threat of fires currently, especially since we're in fire season for the whole state.
These following zones are still in an evacuation warning: HUM E204B, north of River Road, south of 6th Street, Alder Point Road, east of Steelhead Road, and Ranch Sequoia Drive, and west of River Road. The next zone is Humboldt E205A, north of Hoglin Road, south of Zena Bluff Road, east of Alder Point Road, River Road, and west of Peak Road. Residents may now return home, but should remain cautious and prepare to leave again quickly if conditions worsen. Stay alert for potential hazards such as debris on the roads, gas leaks, hot embers, and emergency response vehicles when returning to your residence or property. Everyone is encouraged to remain prepared for future emergencies by signing up for emergency alerts at humboldtgov.org/alerts. Conditions are subject to change at any time. KMUD will continue to bring updates as they come. Please visit protect.genesis.com for a full zone description. Again, that is protect.genasys.com. From the Klamath National Forest press release, the California Complex Interagency Incident Management Team 9 continues managing the Marble Complex on the Klamath National Forest following a series of lightning-sparked wildfires. The complex includes the Summit and Jack fires. Firefighters are employing a full suppression strategy across the steep terrain and heavy fuels, balancing direct and indirect attack where hazards like snags and difficult access limit options. The Summit Fire remains the more active portion of the complex, while the Jacket Fire continues to show minimal activity. Crew are supported by air resources as conditions allow. The closures remain in place to protect public safety. An emergency area closure was implemented on July 3, 2025, due to Summit Fire in the Marble Mountain Wilderness. The Summit Fire is part of the Marble Complex. The closure area is primarily within the Woolly Creek and extends into the Shackleford Drainage, which includes the area around Cliff Campbell and the Summit Meadow Lakes. A section of the Pacific Crest Trail, including the Shackleford Trailhead, is included within the closure area. The entirety of the closure area is within the Marble Mountain Wilderness. This order is placed through July 17, 2025, but is subject to extension if necessary. To provide for public safety during the ongoing Summit Fire, the emergency closure prohibits the following acts: going in or being upon any National Forest System lands within the Summit Fire closure area, being on any National Forest System trails within the Summit closure area, being on any National Forest System roads within the Summit Fire closure area, and entering or using any developed recreation sites within the Summit Fire closure area. The total personnel standing is 384. The Jacket Fire is at 50 acres with a 5% containment, and the Summit Fire stands at 395 acres with zero containment. For more information on your area and how to be prepared, visit fire.ca.gov or protectgenesis.com. That's protect.genasys.com for a more detailed look at your evacuation zones. KMUD News will continue to bring you updates as they come. From the Six Rivers National Forest press release, today the Butler and Nordheimer structure groups continue implementing structure protection plans, with Butler focusing on the Butler Flat Community's water system. Crews along Salmon River Road will complete roadside brushing and prepare the lower boundary Orleans Trail to link with ridgeline work. The fire doubled in size yesterday, making today's efforts critical. Crews and aircraft will assess fire lines and respond quickly where safe. Helicopters will drop water on key areas, and crews will tackle spot fires near Hamel Creek headwaters. Strategy includes backing fire down from the ridge towards Lewis Creek and going direct along the boundary Orleans Mountain Trail. The Incident Command Post remains at the Orleans District Office, with base camp at Oak Bottom Campground. Separately, one prescribed burn and one cultural burn are planned today. The Mid-Klamath Watershed Council will burn 6 acres at Butler Flat Meadow around 4 p.m. as part of their Butler RX plan, independent from the Butler Fire. A cultural burn may occur across the creek. For questions, contact MKWC at 530-627-3202. There will be a community meeting about the Butler and Red Fires Wednesday, July 9th at 5 p.m. at the Karuk Department of Natural Resources, located at 39051 Highway 96 in Orleans. For those unable to attend in person, a recording will be available on Facebook after the meeting. Siskiyou County Sheriffs have evacuation warnings order in place for the Butler Fire. An evacuation order has been issued for SIS 1703 with no residents. Warnings apply to Zone SIS 1704, that is for Butler Creek, Lewis Creek, Bloomer Mine Residence, and Nordheimer Campground. The next zone is SIS 1707 and SIS 1803A with no residents. There are no planned road closures along Salmon River Road. However, the public may experience minor delays as crews work on roadside brushing over the next few days. Nordheimer and Oak Bottom grounds are closed due to wildfire and fire suppression activities. For more information on your area and how to be prepared, visit fire.ca.gov or protectgenesis.com. That's protect.genasys.com for a more detailed look at your evacuation zones. KMUD News will continue to cover the Butler Fire as updates come. Turning to Mendocino County Sheriff's Office, an update on the assault with a deadly weapon towards an elder that happened on July 1st. At approximately 7:46 p.m. on July 1st, Mendocino County Sheriff's deputies responded to an assault with a deadly weapon in the 21,000 block of Redwood Ridge Road, Boonville. A 74-year-old male victim sustained a hand laceration after being attacked with a machete-style tool by a known acquaintance known as 43-year-old Ryan Stearns. Deputies learn Stearns has entered the victim's home uninvited and brandished the weapon before the victim fought him off. Stearns fled the scene on foot. Evidence recovered at the residence supported the victim's account. A warrant was issued for Stearns' arrest. On July 3rd, multiple citizen sightings placed Stearns in Boonville and Navarro areas, reportedly traveling by motorized bicycle. That afternoon, a disturbance was reported at the Comptage store involving an intoxicated man who fled in nearby woods. Deputies located and arrested Stearns without incident after an extensive search. Stearns was booked at the Mendocino County Jail for assault with a deadly weapon, burglary, and elder abuse causing injury, with bail set at $50,000. The Sheriff's Office thanks the Anderson Valley community for their assistance in the safe apprehension of the suspect. In state news, LA law enforcement and other leaders say ICE raids are making their work more difficult. KPFA's Scott Baba reports.
Civic leaders from around Los Angeles gathered in the city of Artesia to discuss the negative impacts of federal immigration activities on their communities and local businesses. Artesia Mayor Ali Sajad Taj said that he understood the fear and uncertainty residents and businesses were feeling as a result of raids by immigration enforcement, and he said the city stood by them.
Public safety is our top priority. Every single person in Artesia deserves to feel safe, respected, and valued. Our city not operates in fear. We operate in unity, dignity, and respect. To our residents, I know this is a stressful time. If you are feeling anxious, please know that you are not alone.
Taj encouraged residents to attend weekly Know Your Rights meetings put on by the county. Cody Mendoza, spokesman for Democratic Congressman Derek Tran, read a statement from the representative in which he said he was deeply troubled by the raids being conducted by ICE both across the state and the country.
This administration is deliberately sowing chaos to divide us and to distract us from the fact that they are literally taking food off tables of working families to give billions of dollars to the most wealthy. We need investigations. We need oversight. We need accountability. My office has been working diligently to make sure that our community members have the resources they need. I want to say very clearly, if you need help, if your loved ones need help, if your neighbor needs help, my office door is always open. As long as I represent you, I'm going to keep fighting for you, no matter what.
George Valdez is chief of the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department's South Patrol Division. He stressed that the LA County Sheriff's Department does not take part in federal immigration enforcement, and he said that ICE raids are making the work of local law enforcement significantly more difficult.
We depend on your trust to do our jobs. The trust is built when you feel comfortable calling 911, reporting crimes, cooperating with investigations, or simply walking down the streets feeling safe. When people are afraid to speak with our deputies or law enforcement, the whole community is less safe. Let me also say this to our immigrant families who live and work within our communities. You are a vital part of the community. You deserve safety, respect, and to protect your rights.
Bell Gardens Mayor Jorge Chavez condemned recent federal immigration raids as un-American.
Here in America, we're regretting certain rights, where we have due process, where you have your Miranda rights. We're clearly seeing videos, evidence, documented incidents in which individuals are being picked up, regardless of your status, just by the way you look like, racial profiling, by Border Patrol, the VHS, or whatever they are, because they're not identifying themselves. And it's been very difficult to engage. Within these last 5 years, back in 2020 when we had the protests of George Floyd, it's taken quite a while for our police agencies to build that trust, to once again regain the trust of the community. And for the federal government to come in and to disturb that, it's a true mistake.
If signed into law, President Donald Trump's budget bill would more than quadruple current immigration enforcement funding, allocating roughly $170 billion through 2029. a dramatic increase from the $34 billion Congress approved for fiscal year 2025. The measure would make U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement the most heavily funded federal law enforcement agency. Critics warn the unprecedented funding would fuel mass deportations, economic disruption, and limited access to humanitarian relief. I'm Scott Baba, Pacifica Radio, KPFA.
Advocates fear state cannabis tax proposals could unravel and hurt programs for children, KPFA's Lauren Schmidt reports.
At a virtual press conference this Thursday, the coalition voiced strong opposition to Assembly Bills 8 and 564. Measures that would reshape how hemp-derived cannabis products are taxed and regulated, while delaying a scheduled excise tax increase intended to replace funding lost from the 2022 repeal of the cannabis cultivation tax. Jim Keddy, executive director of Youth Forward, says the need to preserve this funding, promised under Proposition 64, is especially urgent, as organizations serving low-income families face potential setbacks from recent federal proposals.
Nonprofit organizations that serve children and youth have already been battered by the Trump administration. You know, we've seen freezes and cuts to major revenue sources for child and youth services. And now we're seeing on the horizon the potential for further cuts here at the state level.
Dr. Lynn Silver, a pediatrician and public health advocate, says California youth would ultimately bear the cost.
If both AB 564 and AB 8, and I know these are a lot of numbers, are passed, in addition, they will illegally divert another $1.35 billion over 7.5 years. With all three of these measures, the grand total of money diverted from children and the environment that had been promised will exceed $2 billion over the next decade. The sole purpose of these cuts is to provide tax and fee breaks to for-profit recreational cannabis businesses. This is an immense boondoggle for the cannabis industry that's coming at the cost of kids.
Diana Ross, executive director of the San Diego-based Mid-City Community Advocacy Network, says these kinds of state and federal cuts compound risk for vulnerable communities.
We are on the precipice of seeing programs for children and the most vulnerable families in our community be rolled back. So it's really beyond me why these two bills would even be under consideration. These were promises that were made as to voters in California to fund and dedicate resources to children and to our environment when Prop 64 passed.
However, not everyone agrees with the coalition's concerns.
I think it's really short-sighted to sort of frame this as a zero-sum game.
Ross Gordon, policy chair of the Origins Council, which represents about 400 legacy cannabis-producing communities across the state, says the proposed delay is necessary to protect small-scale growers still struggling in the legal market.
This is a bill that is designed to prevent or roll back an increase to the cannabis excise tax from 15% to 19%. So actually now on July 1st, the cannabis excise tax is increased from 15% to 19%, and AB 564, if it passes, would retain that 15% tax rate. So that's something we've been really strongly supportive of because of the really significant issues that we've seen in the licensed cannabis market.
Critics argue the bills amount to a tax break for industry at the expense of public benefit. Gordon rejects that comparison.
I think the perspective from some of those organizations is, of course, they'd like to have more funding rather than less. The reason from our perspective, I think that's short-sighted is that we just don't have a viable cannabis market here in California, particularly when you compare California to other states.
Both AB 8 and AB 564 are currently under consideration in the state Senate and expected to be debated in the coming months. For KPFA News, I'm Lauren Schmidt.
In national news, anti-hunger groups warn Oregon must backfill federal SNAP cuts. Suzanne Potter reports.
Oregon lawmakers would have to find an extra $850 million in the state budget starting in 2028 to cover costs to SNAP in the so-called One Big Beautiful Bill just signed by President Donald Trump. Alex Agdai with Partners for a Hunger-Free Oregon says the bill is projected to cause an estimated 100,000 Oregonians to lose SNAP coverage by 2034. He says policymakers will face some hard choices going forward.
We believe that there is no other option than to find the funding, because our state simply cannot abandon the 1 in 8 of all Oregonians that rely on this program to feed their families.
Agdai adds the bill makes more people subject to a work requirement, even though 83% of Oregon Trail Card users are already employed. It also requires people to verify their eligibility more often, and it cuts the amount the federal government reimburses for the administrative costs of SNAP. Agdai says low-income families will face similar paperwork obstacles to maintain coverage under the Oregon Health Plan because of huge cuts to Medicaid.
Let's make no mistake, this bill will kill. The level of cuts that the SNAP program will experience, in addition to Medicaid and other essential services, is frankly unheard of, and the impact in Oregon will stretch far across the state.
The legislature just concluded its 2-year session, but lawmakers will begin to address these issues in the short session next February. For Oregon News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
And Texas flooding tolls passes 100 as administration blasts criticism of cuts to National Weather Service, KPFA's Christopher Martinez reports.
The death toll from the deadly floods in Texas has topped 100, and the response is still unfolding. The number of dead reached 104 by news time, including 28 children. Former federal officials and outside experts had warned for months that President Donald Trump's staffing cuts to the National Weather Service could endanger lives. The Trump administration is pushing back against those criticisms.
To any person who has deliberately lied about these facts surrounding this catastrophic event, you should be deeply ashamed.
Carolyn Leavitt is the White House press secretary.
Unfortunately, in the wake of this once-in-a-generation natural disaster, we have seen many falsehoods pushed by Democrats such as Senator Chuck Schumer and some members of the media. Blaming President Trump for these floods is a depraved lie, and it serves no purpose during this time of national mourning.
Texas Senator Ted Cruz also blasted those criticisms.
One of the things that's predictable is that you see some people engaging in, I think, partisan games and trying to blame their political opponents for a natural disaster. And you see that with a hurricane, with a tornado, with a wildfire, with this flooding, where people immediately say, well, the hurricane is Donald Trump's fault. You know, look, that I think most normal Americans know that's ridiculous. And I think this is not a time for partisan finger-pointing and attacks.
President Donald Trump addressed criticisms as he spoke to reporters on Sunday. One reporter asked whether the DOGE cuts to federal government left key vacancies in the National Weather Service. But Trump was not accepting any blame.
You look at that, that what a situation that all is, and that was really the Biden setup. That was not our setup, but I wouldn't blame Biden for it either. I would just say this is a 100-year catastrophe, and it's just so horrible to watch.
Trump was also asked whether the government should hire back some of the meteorologists it had fired.
I wouldn't know that. I really wouldn't. I would think not. This was the thing that happened in seconds. Nobody expected it. Nobody saw it. Very talented people are there, and they didn't see it. It's, I guess they said, once in 100 years they've never seen anything like this. So I wouldn't, I mean, people are trying to blame the school. They're trying to blame the camp. They're trying to blame... It's just a horrible thing, but no, I wouldn't say that, no.
Then there's the question of phasing out the Federal Emergency Management Agency and whether Trump is now reconsidering that. Trump did not have much to say on that point.
Well, FEMA is something we can talk about later, but right now they're busy working, so we'll leave it at that. Go ahead.
The July 4th holiday likely attracted many visitors to the area outside San Antonio, making it difficult to track all of the people who may have been in the area, and it's difficult to estimate how many people may still be missing. Meanwhile, Press Secretary Leavitt warns the danger may not be over.
The situation on the ground remains dangerous, and there could be additional public safety threats with potential incoming heavy rain. So we encourage everyone in the area to remain vigilant, listen to all warnings, and respond accordingly.
Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
In National Native News, Antonia Gonzalez reads today's headlines.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. President Trump is proposing drastic funding cuts for tribal colleges and universities. KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio has more on institutions in Arizona and New Mexico.
Without doubt, this is threatening to close their doors.
Anna Wake Rose is Cherokee. She's president and CEO of the nonprofit American Indian Higher Education Consortium. These schools depend on three federal agencies to stay financially afloat.
If you take away any one of those legs, that stool will fall. And we actually saw flat funding at both the Department of Education and USDA.
As for the Interior Department,
ironically, the agency that's really in charge of the trust responsibility to Indian people is the one that zeroed out funding.
The White House did not respond to KJZZ's request when asked to explain why. But Scott Davis, who is Standing Rock Sioux and senior advisor to Interior Secretary Doug Burgum, testified during a congressional hearing that these huge cuts are nothing new.
We've been through the ebbs and flows of funding with Congress for a long time. We've seen cuts, we've seen increases, we've seen it all, but we've always been resilient.
Fauna Offam Community College President Stephen Schoonmaker worries this is nothing short of a death sentence.
Some tribal colleges will die quickly and others will die slowly, but we cannot sustain without the obligated funds that should be coming and have come for a long time.
While the community college is home to nearly 1,200 students with four campuses statewide, Schoonmaker says they are still dependent on the feds. More than half of its operational funding comes from the Bureau of Indian Education. He fears funding shortfalls could have cascading effects, like losing their accreditation, which took years to achieve.
Our accreditor is going to say, are you fiscally stable? And if you aren't, they're just going to look at that as a red flag.
And the looming cuts could discourage student interest, with Schoonmaker saying the mere threat hurts enrollment.
Why would a student say, I'm going to go to Tonawanda Community College when they may lose 90% of a major funding source?
In Santa Fe, the Institute of American Indian Arts is bracing for the Trump administration to do away with its $13 million appropriation.
They've never given us a reason. Didn't expect this one, though.
President Robert Martin, who is Cherokee, never imagined his summer being bogged down by grave budget talks before retiring later this month. Now it's up to lawmakers in D.C. to decide the fate of this prestigious art school in the Southwest.
In our name, it has Indian and arts, and both of those I don't think are considered to be very important to this current administration.
For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrazio.
Leaders of Native organizations and tribes are speaking out against conservative commentator Ann Coulter's recent post on X, which she stated, quote, "We didn't kill enough Indians," with a photo of a Native professor. Native American Rights Fund Executive Director John Echohawk, in a statement Monday, called the post ignorant and immoral and genocidal language, while Cherokee Nation Principal Chief Chuck Hoskin Jr. shared a long response on Facebook, calling the post beyond abhorrent and dangerous hate speech. The U.S. Senate Committee on Indian Affairs has scheduled a hearing this month to consider the nomination of William Kirkland for Assistant Secretary for Indian Affairs in the Department of the Interior. Kirkland, who's Navajo, is a political strategist from Georgia and served in the first Trump administration. The National Congress of American Indians applauded his nomination earlier this year, stating the position is critical to upholding the federal government's trust and treaty responsibilities and ensuring the effective delivery of services to tribes. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Katie Phillips. And thanks to our reporters, Scott Baba, Lauren Schmidt, Suzanne Potter, Christopher Martinez, and Antonia Gonzalez. Redwood Community Radio is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. K KMUD News is online, and you can find us on KMUD.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Jordan Pangelinan.